Thank you very much for inviting me to be here. I enjoyed those first two presentations a lot. I have some follow-up questions for you guys, so everybody here is doing very interesting work. And I think that what I'm going to talk about, it's really good following up from the previous presentation, was talking all about how to best target resources most effectively. And I'm going to have some words to say about that, too, as I talk about evidence and what it is and does it matter. No relationships to disclose. First, I always like to start by thanking a whole lot of people who make all of this work possible. There's a whole team of people back in Wisconsin, including my co-authors, Allison Burgum and Jennifer Russ, and a lot of other people who work on the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps. And we do this all in very close partnership with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and some of the people who work with us are listed there. And then we also have partners across the nation from a number of different organizations, and they all help us do what we do. I'm not here to give a County Health Rankings talk today, though. Today I'm talking about evidence and a part of our County Health Rankings and Roadmaps program that we call What Works for Health. But first I want you to think about, if you go visit a physician and you think about what criteria you'd like the physician to consider in deciding how to treat you, think about this. Do you want him to, or her, to treat you based on intuition, a gut feeling about what will be effective? I suspect your answer is probably not necessarily. Maybe what they've heard from co-workers is effective. Maybe. Maybe their past experience with similar situations. But maybe results of controlled experimental studies that show a method is helpful. Possibly. Now, that's sounding a little more scientific. And then another option would be what they know by critically reading the literature in the field. Well, the truth is, we all know that when we get treated by a physician, that they probably use all of those things in different degrees. But what I want to talk about is how we make decisions about what kinds of programs and policies we're going to implement at the community level. But we should think, when we're doing this and working at the community level, we're dealing with populations just like physicians deal with treating patients. And we should think carefully. So I'm going to talk to you today about what evidence is. Is it all the same? And what do you do if there isn't any? So, as I said, the segue from the previous talk, scarce resources means that we need to be really careful with our money, and we want to spend our limited resources on things that we have a greater likelihood of being effective. We want our decisions to be sound. We don't want to be in the position of implementing just random policies and programs in communities. But we also need to know when it's time to do something that's tried and proven and when it's time to do something innovative. And making that distinction is very important, because I'm going to talk to you a lot about evidence. And you'll hear that I don't ever say evidence-based, because mostly it's at best evidence-informed. But there are some times when even evidence-informed is not going to help you, and you do need to step out there and innovate. But you need to do this knowingly and not just blindly. So the concept of evidence, I lied. I do have evidence base in the slide because other people use it. I don't like this. I have to get them to change this slide. I borrowed this one. But evidence-based public health, a definition that I'll just let you read rather than me read it in my funny accent. And for those of you who are spending the time listening to me talk and wondering, I grew up in England and then spent 5 years in Massachusetts and then back and forth in the Midwest. So England and Massachusetts are responsible primarily for the way that I talk. Not everybody in Wisconsin sounds like me. So you see a definition there of evidence-based public health. And this is probably familiar to all of you, but still it's helpful for us to think about the sort of hierarchy of levels of evidence. At the bottom, you see opinion, individual opinion, and then you see case reports, and then all the way up to randomized control trials, and then systematic reviews of randomized control trials. That is the best of the best in terms of finding evidence. If you can find a systematic review where a lot of RCTs have been done and someone else has condensed all of that for you and they can come out and give you a recommendation at the end, that's the best that there is. But truthfully, when we're talking about community interventions, those kinds of studies are very difficult, and those systematic reviews are very difficult to find. So what do we do instead? You could go to Google. You could just go searching randomly. You can go to the CDC's community guide to community preventive services. And you also could go to the What Works for Health that we produce out of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps Program. And you can go to a number of other places as well. And so I'm going to talk about that. A lot of these things all say that they are evidence, but that definition of what is evidence varies widely. And that's been one of the takeaways that I hope that you get from this is when somebody says something is evidence-informed or evidence-based, don't just accept it. Dig a little deeper and see what they mean by that, because it isn't always the same. So because a lot of this work was done as we developed What Works for Health, I'm going to just give you the background on our own contribution to the field of evidence in community health. This is not meant to be a sales pitch for what we do, but it is available to you at countyhealthrankings.org if you want to go visit. And what we do there in the What Works for Health program is that we assess programs and policies to address the four major areas of health factors that we include in the county health rankings. And so I don't know if you can read that from the back, but we look at programs and policies to address health behaviors, clinical care, social and economic factors, and the physical environment. And we basically have we have a staff of analysts who review a lot of material. They have very structured protocols for going through material, but they basically do the hard work for a lot of you. And they come up with ratings that you see there on the left, all the way from scientifically supported, which is the strongest rating that we give, all the way down to evidence of ineffectiveness. And you'll see, and you'll see, as others do, is that there is this hierarchy of evidence that the analysts think a lot about and are very careful about as they put forward. And so, in What Works for Health, what you can do is you can go on that model and you can click on any of the things on the right-hand side, like tobacco use, and you'll come up with a listing. I know if you click on diet and exercise, you'll come up with 43 policies and programs. The ones that have been rated scientifically supported are going to be at the top of the list. At the very bottom of the list, the ones that we hope people don't find are the evidence of ineffectiveness. We have a bit of discussion about whether they should even be there, but if they've been really found to be ineffective, we think it's important that we do make that information available. So just by being in our database is not an endorsement. We have to clarify that because we do have some in there that are considered ineffective. But we are not the only organization that does this kind of work. There are a number of other organizations that do ratings. And so what we wanted to do for our study was look at what we did and see how we are similar to and how we're different from others. And we were really trying to see how comparable ratings from one organization are to those of another. We compared What Works for Health to these eight other organizations, went carefully through the fine print on their websites and with qualitative analysis, and then we tried to align up their ratings with ours, and this work was done independently by two different analysts, and then we compared and reviewed to reconcile. And so what we came up with, I'm ahead of myself here. So the organizations that we looked at broke out into several types. We looked at a couple that are sort of in the broad field of public health, and then the other organizations split out between those that are primarily looking at social programs and those that are looking at education. Remember that we were trying to do things that compared to the scope of our work, and the scope of our work is across the four main health factors. And so it was important to us to go beyond just traditional public health and to be looking, for example, at education, because we find ourselves with communities when they use data, as is available in Massachusetts, when they use data to sort of drill down and look and see where their issues are and what's preventing them from being healthier, that education is really key. So we looked at several organizations from there. And the way that we went through this was we looked at their write-ups about how many studies they looked at, what types they were, whether or not they evaluated the quality of studies, if they looked at the magnitude of the effects, and how they went about locating policies and programs to evaluate, and then how many and what different kinds of rating levels that they assigned. And the results of all of this are in a slide which is probably really difficult to read, but I am happy to email copies to anybody who wants to see this in more detail. But what you can get from this, even though you may not be able to see the details of it, is so we put our ratings on the left-hand side of the screen, the what works for health. I think you probably might be able to read that. That's the left-hand column. And at the We color code our ratings on our website to make it easier for people to understand, and we give our two highest ratings of scientifically supported and some evidence. They're shaded in green. And then we have a category that we call expert opinion and another that are insufficient evidence, and we put both of those as yellow, so like proceed but with caution. And then we have two shades of, well, we have pink and then dark red. So we have mixed evidence and we have evidence of ineffectiveness. So I'm going to talk a little bit about ours, and then some of the rest of this graphic will make a bit more sense. So obviously the evidence of ineffectiveness is where either negative effects have been found or even harmful effects have been found. Unfortunately, actually, I made a facetious comment about whether or not we do or not do not include these. Those kinds of things don't always make it into the literature. You know, positive findings are the ones that get published. And so let me just tell you that if you have negative findings, please still submit them. Don't say, oh, it'll never get published. It needs to get out there. We need to know. Even if it isn't completely conclusive, like the ones that we categorize in this red thing, we have something that we call mixed evidence. And that's where we put studies where we have found both positive effects from a study and then other studies where they have negative effects. And so there may not be, you know, enough to have a systematic review to make it come out with that full rating of completely, you know, we're sure that this is ineffective. But if there's mixed evidence from different, that should tell you something. So insufficient evidence often means that something just hasn't been studied enough, that we just couldn't find enough about it to be able to make a determination one way or another. And so this is another plea for those of you out there that if you are doing evaluations of policies and programs, make them available, because if they don't become available, organizations like us that try to disseminate the word can't find them. So, and I know that there are politics involved whether or not you're allowed to do that, but to please push on that, because everybody needs this information. Now, moving on up, the category that also we have in yellow is called expert opinion, and we are the only rating organization that does this. And we do this for one. The origin of this is because we do a lot of our work. We have a community advisory board that guides our work at the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. And when we first released What Works for Health in Wisconsin about 5 years ago, we were discussing it with our board. They started pointing out to us things that we didn't have in the database that we couldn't find any evidence on. But there are things like access to dentists. If you encourage a dentist to move to a community that has no dentists, you have increased access to dental care. It's sort of a no-brainer. There aren't a whole series of articles that tell you this, but that's the kind of thing where, okay, that one just makes sense. And so if we find a body of experts that don't have particular biases or anything, you know, and they have recommended something, we will include those in there. But we do it with a cautionary note. We don't claim that experts are like the true results of RCTs and things like that. But there are times that, you know, a community is thinking, wanting to do something, and that we now in Wisconsin have communities follow us quite closely. And if we don't have something in there, and it's something that we all know is going to do good, we don't want to be discouraging it. So that expert opinion category sort of helps us through that. And they're also, obviously, in public health. Hopefully you've all seen the article, the facetious article out of the British Medical Journal about why they didn't do random controlled trials on parachutes. sort of a lack. that's a classic article if you ever want to teach students about this kind of work. I mean, obviously there are some places where it's just not feasible to assign people randomly into groups. So then at the top of our slide, we have something that we call some evidence and something that's called scientifically supported, and those differentiate basically based on the number of studies and the quality of them. And so when we are working with communities, we encourage them to look at first at things that are at the top in those green categories. But then if they can't find anything that meets their particular needs, then we say, then go ahead, take a look at those yellow ones, or even think about designing something yourself. But think about the characteristics of those programs that you have read about that do work, and, you know, use evidence to help you, even if it isn't exactly about the particular thing that you want to implement. But so, sorry, I got thrown by the time signal there, but I'm, anyway, so I am okay on time. So we had those six categories, but then you see going across the screen that there are other organizations that rate at the top of the scale the same as us, and there are organizations that rate at the bottom of the scale the same as us, but then you'll also see other organizations in there that don't. And that have a more limited range of studies that they look at. And so this is where, and this is not meant to diss any of these other places, it's just to let you know that what one organization calls proven isn't necessarily the same as what some other organization might say is recommended or scientifically supported. And what's a promising practice to one organization might be an insufficient evidence to another organization. So look whenever you use any of us, read our details on our website about how we rate and what we do. Don't just blindly take what we say. No presentation is complete if it doesn't have one of these word art things. But when we looked at the rating labels, you do see evidence being the most frequent, and you see other words in there: effective, promising, potentially, weak, mixed, and a lot of other words to describe. And so basically this just says that we all use a lot of different words, and sometimes we use a word and we all mean it the same way, and sometimes we don't. So to wrap this up, as I think I've probably beat the point to death, there is variability in the way that we talk about ratings and the way that ratings are listed. There are some similarities. Many of the organizations that do this do rely heavily on randomized controlled trials or concurrent comparisons and multiple studies. We don't just you need more than one study to say something works. And as I said, the fine print is really important. But when it comes to actually using information like this in your community, it's not just about the evidence, and we know that. So first of all, if you find a strategy that looks promising, you need to, you know, be sure that it addresses your priorities, that it's going to have the desired outcomes that you expect, and that it will affect the populations of need. And if you have disparities within your organization, within your community, as many of us do, you'll want to look a little deeper into that. And then you have to think about, well, just in general, will this strategy work well with our community, with the kinds of people that we'd have here? Will they accept this kind of thing? If we build it, will they come? And then is it feasible to implement? We would love to say that we had cost information on all of our policies and programs that we include in the database, but that's another area where the literature, both the scientific literature and the gray literature, are still fairly lacking in terms of people actually publishing what it costs to do something. We provide that information when we can find it, but cost can be a major barrier but there are other barriers to feasibility as well. Time, resources. And then if a policy or program is not going to work exactly as you've seen it described, you have to think about if you're going to need to adapt it, but then you're going to think about, okay, if I adapt it, am I really going to be staying true to it? And will I be able to assess the effects of those adaptations? So if you can't find evidence in some of these sources, then you are, I mean, it's much easier for you if you can go to rating organizations. Other than that, the peer-reviewed literature and gray literature. And but again, please help us build the evidence base. We really need to share results as much as possible. So there is no universal process or definition for evidence base. RCTs aren't always the answer to everything. Evidence does matter, but so do many other factors. And then when there isn't evidence, we have to think, okay, is this a promising practice? Is it something that we might want to try? Do we want to step out and be innovative? And if we are going to be innovative, be sure to evaluate so that then you can share with others the results of your innovation. Thank you.